24/7 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. It is Thursday, February 6th. I hope you're having a great day, a great week, and making a little money, getting a little smarter. I hope I can help keep you motivated and do that other thing, keep you a little smarter and more educated. So excited for a great show today. And as always, we appreciate you being with us. First up today, we have Chase Insania. He has built a very successful CPA practice, but has added other things to it, for example, payroll, and has a really unique model, I think. You know, I see CPAs all the time, and his model and Chase's success really impressed me. Quite a few employees, they're just killing it. Plus, we have a really interesting discussion of S-Corp versus LLC. You know, I've always been a big proponent of just starting off as an LLC. That's fine for you. And we asked Chase, when does that end? And he gives me a different answer than what we usually hear. And so it's really worth listening to get that insight as well. We also talk about that new Fed thing, the beneficial ownership information that the Fed is collecting. And so that is Chase. Great information. After that, we have my favorite environmental entrepreneur, Wayne Elliott, is back. Today, we're going to talk about Canada, tariffs, Trump, international trade, all of the like. He has been doing international trade for decades. Small things like buying United States submarines and recycling them. He also had a deal for a couple aircraft carriers and talks about that today. Al Gore killing that deal and the environmental impact of that. You know, if a ship doesn't get recycled, it rots, sinks. Isn't that worse? I mean, don't you want it to be professionally removed and taken care of? And so Wayne and I continue to discuss and learn about tariffs. He has been doing international business just a long time, as I said. I want to make sure you know the background. Wayne is also the owner of Strauss Naturals, who is helping the show here. They are a great friend of the show. And Wayne is using this part of his career and the later part of his career to work only with Strauss Naturals. And so they are very important to the show. And Wayne and I are working on a book together about his career as what I am calling the real environmentalist, the for-profit entrepreneurs, the capitalist entrepreneurs that are out there making money, making the world cleaner and healthier for the rest of us to live in. They're the heroes in the story, the environmental story. So we'll learn more about that as well. Thanks for being with us. We'll be right back.
School for Startups Radio hopes you will reach out to us if you have any questions or comments, or if you need help with your business at any stage, from concepts to exit. Jim accepts all connections on LinkedIn. He tweets from @EntrepreneurJim, and he responds to emails at james.beach@att.net. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
We are back, and again, still so very appreciative that you are with us. Very excited to introduce our next guest. Please welcome Chase Insania to the show. He is a CPA out of the Austin, Texas area, and for the last 14 years has been president of Insania CPA. It is a full-service small business CPA, tax, consulting, financial accounting, bookkeeping, the entire basket firm. Chase, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. So, small business right now, I guess the biggest concern is where do you stand on the, oh, I forgot to look up the name, the new federal law where we have to report our LLC ownerships to the federal government?
Yeah, the BOI, Beneficial Ownership Information Report.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Are you recommending your clients do that or not do that?
We're recommending they go ahead and take care of it. I mean, if you want to do it yourself, it takes like 5 minutes, but I mean, they already have the information, so it's not like a big deal to me.
Okay, that's true. Do you know if it's the update on the legal situation? I know some courts have put a injunction on it and then the injunction got lifted. Has anything happened there that you know of? I haven't heard about it in the last 2 or 3 weeks. You?
The last I saw from the CPA Society was that the injunction got lifted, so it was still due January 1st.
Okay.
Now, I mean, it's highly unlikely they'll charge penalties for anything, so that's why we're suggesting to just go ahead and get it filed, because I foresee it still being necessary at some point. But I mean, all you're really reporting is your own personal information that they already have, and then as a one partner, and then really they're just looking for foreign ownership. You know, where is the money flowing to, which they can grab from K-1s already, but they're just wanting you to verify if there's any foreign activity.
Well, I've filled it out for my businesses, and as you said, it took about 5 minutes each. It's interesting, half my guests say do it, it's not required right now, and the others say do it. I should run a tally the entire time. It'd be interesting, because I've asked 30 or 40 people and gotten 40 different opinions with almost no consensus. But anyway, Chase, let's move on. Congratulations on the success of your firm. Why'd you decide to go out and open your own shop? Tell me about your entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah, great question. You know, I was in corporate accounting for a while. I've always been entrepreneurial, you know, always wanted to start a business when I was younger and didn't know it was a CPA firm back then. And then had the opportunity in 2011, you know, I ended up buying a bookkeeping firm to get started, but don't recommend doing that. And, you know, I didn't want to run it like a typical lifestyle business, like a lot of the older CPAs did in the past. I didn't want to die at my desk. And so I built it with the ground up with technology back in 2011 that nobody was really doing at the time. Nobody was paperless back then. Nobody had VoIP phones. You know, nobody was just utilizing the best technology out there. And so that was the original kind of plan, is to make it tech efficient. So at some point it could run itself, which effectively today it's doing with a great team of 20 people we have. But from a client perspective, you know, I'd done taxes and done bookkeeping on the side for people throughout the years in college and after. And what I always noticed was, you know, I was doing the bookkeeping, but somebody else was doing the taxes or vice versa. And nobody ever talked to each other. And so back then it wasn't, you know, really a thing where you're bridging these three things together, bookkeeping, payroll, tax, under one umbrella. And so from 2011, that's kind of what my business model was, to bridge those things together. And then, that's kind of how we started.
What was the trio? Bookkeeping, tax, and what was the third?
Payroll.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because, and then a lot of people, you know, back then, I mean, even attorneys I talked to, they didn't even know about S-corps back then. Now it's real popular, but you go back 14, 15 years, like it wasn't a real thing. And, in the Austin area at least, and, you know, I educated all these attorneys on the benefits of S-corp and why it was different and how you save on taxes. And so that was a big part of our journey initially, was taking these small business owners, educating them on S-corp benefits, and helping them save money by being an S-corp, because the payroll, the reasonable salary, plays into your net profit of your bookkeeping P&L, that then all flows into your business and personal taxes. So that's kind of the journey of why all three of those flowed together for me, so that it could be efficient for the business owner together.
I have not heard of payroll mixed in as well. And I got to say, as a small business owner, I would love that. That would be so much easier for us. So I love that trio. And 20 employees.
I mean, payroll's a big,
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, payroll's a big piece, you know, especially when you're an S corp, because like, we have a third party software that runs a S corp test to determine what your salary needs to be. So it's kind of a first line of defense with the IRS. We're not just guessing a salary number, but you know, as an S corp, the goal of an S corp is to not over payroll yourself W-2 money, because otherwise you're just wasting FICA payroll taxes. If you overpay yourself, the money you never get back from the government. So that's why, you know, we feel like payroll needs to be included in there. It's just an ancillary transactional piece of our advisory that we help with, but it's a necessary piece to make sure our business owners are saving as much money as possible.
Now, Chase, why are you going for S corps? You know, everyone, and me included, has always said LLCs until you get really big, and then they'll tell you when to go S corp. You know, your good CPA will tell you. Do you disagree with that? Does a $800,000 business need to be S corped?
Well, a couple factors. It depends on where you're at in the country. You know, if you're in a high state tax rate, then it may not make sense. We're here in Texas, so that doesn't apply to us.
No state taxes there, right?
Yeah, just all property tax. But
right. How much is your property tax then? Sorry to interrupt, Chase, but my mind is right there. So if you own a nice $1 million, 4-bedroom, 3-bath house in a nice neighborhood, you know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes from downtown Austin, what's your property tax a year going to be?
I mean, off the top of my head, I want to say around 20-ish thousand.
20,000.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, that's just my guess, but
I pay 3,000.
But so back to, you know, with S corp, you know, obviously a high tax state rate, it may not make sense to be a flow through S corp. You know, in New York or California or somewhere, but for the most part, like if you're in Texas, for example, it does, or non-tax states or low income tax states. And so the real benefit, for us, a break even is like 50-60K net profit after expenses to be an S corp. An LLC is just a formation, and then you would make a tax election with the IRS to be taxed as an S corp. So we always recommend, you know, if you start out as an LLC in a, you know, small business, you don't make that election until it justifies paying additional tax prep for business taxes with the S corp return.
Right.
So that's why that 50-60K is our break even number, because below that, it doesn't cost benefit to make the election. But if you're making 100K plus as an S corp owner, if you're making 100K plus and not an S corp, and you're 100% owner, or maybe you got two or three owners, and that's all of your business activity, you probably want to look at making an S corp election and seeing where that FICA tax savings comes into play. Because most of the time, if you're a partnership, you're flowing that into your 1040. The majority of the time, that box one income is subject to FICA tax, and that's where you can see a significant savings of, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 a year.
Okay. That's getting up there. So that's a successful run. All right. Back to follow up on some of the things you said in your introduction. You said you didn't want to build yourself a lifestyle business, and 20 employees would certainly be, you know, a practice big enough to sell. And so it seems like it would be a very valuable asset. I remember the first time I went on vacation, I gave myself an F. I spent the entire time on the phone with the office. Can you go away for a month now and come back, Chase, or are you still needed there every day? Could you truly step away?
I can go away. I couldn't just step away fully for a full month yet. Kind of my day-to-day activity today is more like biz dev. Yes. But today it's more like biz dev and sales that I'm still kind of building that team out. But I don't do bookkeeping. I don't do taxes on my own. I mean, my team runs it. My tax manager and accounting manager are amazing. They've been with me a long time. I mean, my accounting manager has been here since 2013. So we have a lot of longevity here, and we have a very seasoned, experienced team take care of everything for our clients. Most of the time I'm involved just managing the business, day-to-day kind of stuff with the team, and then having higher-level conversations with clients, depending on the conversation they want to have.
Do you have a strong number two that runs things when you're gone? What does the upper management structure look like now?
Yeah, I mean, my management team, so I've got accounting manager and then tax manager. They effectively run their teams day to day. I've got a kind of in-house controller. She also runs her team. I'm doing the controller advisory side of the business. So those three, effectively when I'm out are, the number two in place to take care of things.
All right. And what is your firm's strategy vis-a-vis the IRS? How combative do you think you should be? Are you on a scale of 1 to 10? What are your thoughts on the way you should treat the IRS? What are your thoughts on just how aggressive are you?
That's a good question. I mean, every CPA, every firm's different. I mean, I have multiple businesses myself, so, I understand where people are trying to come from. I like to describe we're not ultra conservative, but we're not ultra aggressive either. We play in the gray area and maximize deductions, but we're not going to submit anything that's going to raise a red flag or potentially raise an audit. It's just not worth the professional liability for us.
Right. Well, I like that strategy. That seems very sane. What are the other businesses that you're in, and how does it fit into your 40-hour-a-week lifestyle? I'm joking about 40 hours a week. Tell us about the other businesses and how you manage them, and how do they fit in?
Yeah. When I started my business, I was like, I'm going to have so much personal time. I'll work out every day and, just be so much extra time. And that's never the case. But I mean, I love what I do and, I love being an entrepreneur. I mean, I got software that I'm into, I'm into rental property. Got some other business activities that I dealt with too. So it's just kind of a hodgepodge of things that I've acquired over time. But, it doesn't take a lot of my time. I think most of mine is really, I manage my own portfolio these days. And I just enjoy following the market and the news. So I, keep up and trading probably almost every day, just nibbling here and there on things that I'm buying and building up a dividend portfolio. But other than that, I mean, that's pretty much what I do day to day here.
And what kind of boss are you? How do you see yourself in terms of training? Is it your responsibility to train people? Do you talk about culture? Do you massage the culture? What's it like to work for Jason Sonja?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I feel like we have a great culture here. Our goal is to level everyone up and keep educating them in their positions. We don't like to just pigeonhole people in a corner and just stick them with doing something forever. So for example, like on the tax side, we've got a few people that just graduated college and they start out, very green, doing some basic 1040s, maybe just tax admin type work. But they're learning year after year. And eventually the goal is for them to learn complicated 1040s, to learn business returns, and then eventually start reviewing returns from other people doing basic 1040s. Most firms aren't built like that. They suppress, you know, people down usually. It's usually partner driven, where most of the communication has to run through the partner, so it's highly inefficient. Whereas here, if somebody works on the return, they're communicating directly with the client. So we're all about leveling our team up, making them better, owning their own role. They understand, you know, figure it out for yourself sometimes, but we work as a team environment, so everybody's here to help each other. And people that we've hired that don't really fit in that culture just tend to work themselves out. And we, you know, I'm big on work-life balance because I don't want to burn people out. So for example, we have 8 weeks in the summer where it's slow season for us. So every other Thursday, Friday, you get off. It just allows you to kind of have a longer 4-day weekend to recharge from the busy tax season and then before we get an extension season. And that's just a ancillary benefit that we have here that other firms I know have don't do. A lot of them just give you extra PTO time, but then you can't ever take it because you're working 50-hour weeks all year long. That's just not how we're structured. We're busy in the spring, we're busier in the fall, and then we have these periods of off time where you can get recharged.
Do you see any changes coming with the new Trump administration? I heard rumors that they're not going to hire all of those 90,000 tax or new IRS employees, or there was even an article, I don't know if it was in The Onion or fake or what, you know, it's so hard to know what's true these days, but that they were going to send those people to the border. What do you think the overall IRS mentality is going to be in the next 4 years? Are they going to be friendly, combative, aggressive? What do you think the IRS is going to look like 5 years from now?
Well, my hope is they're always going to be more tech savvy, but that's never the case. I think the administration doesn't like the IRS. So my guess is they're going to defund, and it's already, I think I already read an article. They already stripped some money from them from the last administration. But I don't foresee like it's going to get bigger and more prominent on auditing like they talked about a few years ago. I think it's good status quo. And from an IRS perspective, you know, they're just going to be managing with what staff they have. I don't see them growing in this administration at all. I don't think the new president likes, I mean, I know he certainly doesn't like the IRS, so I don't. He looks funded, in my opinion.
And what are your thoughts on the market? And we're recording this about a week before it will air. We just had the volatility of the market because of the Chinese AI shock, which some people are now calling the equivalent of a Sputnik moment, the way it's shocked the industry. Where do you think the market's going to be a year from now? And I think it's going to be a good year for tech. What do you think? What sectors are going to look good, Chase?
I'm more of a value investor. So, I'm not a more tech investor, but I think it's frothy. However, I'll caveat that with the new administration is very business friendly. So I predict it's going to be, if you have your money in the right places, I think it's going to be a wealth grab over the next 4 years for whatever the administration's favoring.
Well, I certainly agree with that. Chase, congratulations on building a very successful business. 20 employees is very impressive in this space. Is your goal to get it to 40 and to double, or are you happy where it is? Are you afraid that if you double it, it'll have twice as many managerial issues and stuff. What are your thoughts on the growth?
Yeah, great question. I mean, definitely a 40 person is different than a 20 person managing, but you know, my goal has always been just to grow organically. We've never, you know, never been on this fast track to meet something, but you know, we grow as we build our clientele, and I think that's the track we'll continue being on, and just see where it ends up in, you know, 10 years from now. You know, whether it's employee owned, whether, you know, get acquired or sell or whatever that looks like, or running itself. I mean, I'm open to all those different options, but for now, everybody enjoys what they do, and we love working with the clients we have and helping them grow and build their wealth. And, you know, we'll just keep growing organically.
What about marketing? I mean, obviously you're doing shows like this to get your name out, but do you advertise in the Business Chronicle papers in Texas or anything like that? How do you market?
We don't really do print. I mean, mostly we do, everything's online. Everything's pretty much through Google. So, you know, we'll do some Google ads. We work on just SEO mainly to make sure we're at the top of the page. And just make sure we get our message out there. At the end of the day, I mean, it's a relationship business. So, you know, maybe we're not the right fit. Maybe we are, but we just at least love to have a conversation and see if, you know, if we are the right fit, see how we can help you. And then we go from there. You know, we're not desperate for business anymore. We're established and, you know, we have a great book of clients. So for us, it's finding the right client, that, you know, wants to grow and wants to save money and appreciate our advice, as much as we enjoy working with them. And that's what we're looking for here.
Fantastic. Thanks for being with us. Congratulations on a great run, and I wish you continued success.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question, and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us. I'm excited to welcome back to the show Wayne Elliott, our favorite Canadian environmental entrepreneur. He's had extensive background in ship recycling and battery recycling, but has now devoted his life to helping others get healthier with his Strauss Naturals company, an incredible company that has all sorts of formulas that will make you and all your body parts feel better. I'm on the kidney product right now, and I have not had a kidney stone since I started it. So that's my measure. Wayne, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. Always well. Thanks, Jim. How are you doing?
I am well. Thank you. So all sorts of stuff in the news about Canada and Trump. And I saw that there's a hat in Canada that's selling well now that says, "We are not for sale."
Right. Yes. Canadians, in general, it seems, are quite offended at the whole notion of becoming that 51st state and these tariffs. I've been concerned myself about the tariffs. A 25% tariff would certainly make selling our natural health products, you know, just that much more expensive in the United States. I'm committed to not letting that happen, but 25% is a lot. And so I, as a matter of fact, I called our member of parliament yesterday, a friend of mine, and he's working on this file. with several people in Congress, and I think you said one or two of your senators. And it appears as though President Trump may not have the correct figures with respect to the trade imbalance, but I'm just concerned. He's there. Mr. Trump's a President Trump's very serious man. He usually does what he says. And now, in his defense, Canada has not met its NATO obligations for decades. Supposed to be such a wealthy country. And I believe our debt is at least as much as America's per capita. And our, you know, we do have a defense department, but for example, our Navy has been mostly scrapped. We don't have a ship larger than a frigate in the fleet now. So, you know, I'm so kind of surprised that the United States hasn't raised more of a fuss with Canada before now. And I think between that and the border, that's what President Trump, most of the angst is about. Our border, I mean, you cross into the United States, the border officers are very experienced, very professional. You will not see students in the summertime. I've never seen anyway on the border positions like we've had in Canada sometimes. So Canada has beefed up. Apparently $1.3 billion we'll be spending more on our border security. And but this NATO not providing the ships, personnel, or money for so long, I really can't blame President Trump or the United States for having a problem with Canada over that. You know, we've not met our obligations for a very long time, and for a big country with big coastlines, and we're attached to you guys, sharing one of the biggest borders in the world. You know, it embarrasses me really the what Canada hasn't done over these last years. So I called, I talked to our member of parliament on Monday and had an idea. I've been so involved with ship recycling all my life and tried very hard to get into the U.S. program with the mothball fleet and over quite a number of years, Jim. And when I finally had success 30 odd years ago, whenever Vice President Al Gore was in office, we were best bid on two aircraft carriers out in Bremerton, Washington, the Hornet and the Oriskany. And then Vice President Gore put a moratorium on ship breaking that lasted 4 years, stopped ship breaking in the United States. He's a big environmentalist, and he was, I never held it against him for doing that because they'd made messes. You know, it was a messy business. It's not a white glove business, but a couple of the main players in the United States were, in my opinion, very irresponsible and polluting. So we've never, except for the USS Barracuda, the submarine, we recycled that. Well, it's now 50 years ago, 1974 in Charleston, South Carolina. Since then, I have not recycled any U.S. warships. And so I talked to our MP and said, you know, America never stops building new ships. And what they do with the ships that they're replacing, they put them into long-term layup. I've been to the Chesapeake Bay many times, and they have them anchored. They put bow to stern, and they'll put a dozen ships right alongside each other, lashed together, all the anchors down. And that's how they've stored them. And when they were bidding, when they do bid ships out for recycling, you ride out in the launch and get put aboard the ships is up for recycling. And it costs America quite a bit of money to maintain that MARAD mothball fleet. So I just thought that maybe the quickest way to the goal line here, trying to be solutions-based, would be that America, instead of laying some of these vessels up, let Canada use them, so we have this better defense around North America, and might save the United States some money. Canada could maintain the ships while they were running them, and it would certainly save Canada money to have use of those ships, because if we committed the funds tomorrow that we're supposed to NATO, Jim, and if we had magically had new ships built tomorrow, which we won't have, and our Navy people told me a couple of years ago, if we had new ships at the dock today, we'd be 3 years before we could flash them up and sail away because of the training required on new systems and so forth. So I thought this might be an idea to get to the solution and not cost anybody too much money and give Canada a chance to get busy and start rebuilding a fleet. And our MP told me that he's on this file, among other things, and that that kind of thing has started. He didn't mention ships, but apparently a couple of Black Hawk helicopters that America is loaning or leasing or selling, I don't know which, he didn't say, to Canada. And I just think the great friends that we've been, Canada and the United States, you know, if you, doesn't matter how far back in history you go, this last 200 years, there's been no better neighbor friends than Canada and the USA. So, you know, I'd like to think that we focus on solutions. Canada does need to pull up its socks and do a better job of meeting its obligations. But, you know, I hate to think about trade wars or anything like that. And of course, part of my thinking is selfish. We sell our fabulous natural health products in the United States, and I want everybody to be able to afford them. So this would not be a good thing, well, for any retailer, I suppose, any manufacturer. And from the things I've read, it'd be a bit of a mess, Jim. We export, we do huge trade between the two countries, and apparently the imbalance is not what President Trump has suggested. It's far less of an imbalance, and I just hope we stay best friends and allies, and that people focus on solutions. Right now, it seems to me most of the talk in Canada from politicians and certainly the public, you know, their backs are up, and which at the same time, I mean, I know that we import a lot of goods from the U.S., but you know, for our two countries to start some kind of fight just doesn't seem to make any sense at all. And
Wayne,
I'm just sure we could work this out.
You know, it seems to me that when Trump says that he is trying to buy Greenland or something, that there's usually an ulterior or a backup plan, or that this is simply his first negotiation tactic. I don't think he really wants Greenland and Canada. I think he wants something else and is using this as a way of getting that. Maybe greater access to Greenland and, you know, the ability to station military there is what he really wants. And with Canada, maybe he wants something else, better. I don't know. Does it seem possible that this is simply a negotiation tactic and that he's trying to get something else?
Yeah, that's been suggested certainly and talked about. And you know, Jim, I understand. I think I understand President Trump's position on Greenland and certainly the Panama Canal. I mean, you folks built it. Americans built it, paid for it. And President Carter, I guess, gave it to Panama. I see that, and I think he is serious about that, and I do understand it. Let's face it, it's a very important canal, the Panama Canal, for defense and for trade, and Greenland, I guess. You know, we tend to think of Greenland as, geez, it's just a giant glacier. Well, it's pretty strategic, since that Northern Passage has opened up over global warming. Now ships can transit the north, way north. And, you know, the other thing is, if China, Russia, North Korea were to want to take action against North America, the shortest route is over the North Pole and over Canada. So I don't think it's all bluster negotiating position, really. I think he has a point or some points. And, you know, as far as I hope, because the USA defends the free world, you know, I hope America gets what they need to continue to do that. Canada has a lot of catching up to do. And I don't, you know, I'm not sure to be, I love the United States of America, Jim. I have so many good friends there, and I love the country. I've always loved Florida as a second home, and done a lot of business in the USA most of my life. So I am not terribly offended at the notion. I mean, it's even been talked about before, and I'm not terribly offended at the notion of becoming part of the United States, to be honest with you. Especially if they would change our money at par, you know, where the Canadian dollar now is slumping horribly again, just evidence of what kind of shape this country is really in financially. And, you know, we need the United States. There's no question about that. Any Canadian, or in my opinion, democratic country in the world that doesn't believe how important the United States is just isn't with it. You know, you guys, it's unbelievable, your Defense Department. It's unbelievable the armed forces that you have in other countries. One of my friends told me, well, you know, the United States already has enough military in Canada to take you over. We don't need to send any more. And, you know, I had to learn what annexation meant. And boy, oh boy, I would just like to think we're not going to fight. We're the last two countries in the world that should fight. And our members of parliament and your Congress people, they are working on these things. So I just hope they come up with good, sensible solutions together, and that you know, we don't have to suffer some of these things that's been talked about. But I really don't blame President Trump or America for basically saying, hey, Canada, come on. You got to do your part here.
Yes, Americans do get upset about that. And we hear about that in the news from time to time, and it will tell us which countries have contributed what. And it does upset the average American, I think, that we hear that, and then the same country is mad at us and yelling about how horrible America, you know, is. So,
yeah, well, you know, there's apparently 21 countries, including Canada, that are delinquent and have been delinquent on spending 2% of their GDP on defense. And I know in Canada's case, it's been a long time. So, you know, to just expect America to pick up the tab and protect us all, you know, it's not right. What I was distressed about are our prime minister, who is resigning as soon as they pick a new leader, he says, of their party, the Liberal Party. When the 21 countries were brought to task by President Trump, I believe they collectively agreed that, okay, 2025, we'll spend 2%. Well, then our leader, Prime Minister Trudeau, a month or so later said, well, you know, Canada's going to be till 2032 doing that. I mean, that's 7 more years, Jim. Now he's on his way out, so I guess we've changed our tune, according to the MP I spoke with yesterday, member of parliament I spoke with yesterday. We're committed to spending that 2% within 2 years. In 2 years' time, we'll be doing it. But I don't know. When you look at some of the things that we do spend on and make them a priority over this, I disagree with that, but I have no say in it, certainly. But, I really don't blame America for making the NATO countries or pushing them to meet their obligations. I mean, that's a deal's a deal, right?
Yes, but, so few countries have actually lived up to it that, you know, we've just come to accept that that's the way it's going to be. And Trump is the first one, I guess, strong enough to actually stand up and say, no, we're going to fight against that. So back to the tariffs.
So to answer your question, he certainly has everyone's attention, Jim, to more directly answer your question. Is this just a starting position and getting everybody's attention? Well, he certainly has done that. And I can't blame him. I really can't. I understand. And I'm kind of surprised that America has led us away with not meeting our obligations for so long now.
Yes. Well, American politicians have been that weak for so long. So blame the American politician. What about the tariffs, Wayne? If you did all of a sudden have a 25% tariff, how would Strauss Naturals respond? Do you have any choice but to just add 25% to the cost?
No, I don't believe we could or would do that. What we've tried to do, what we have done in our, hopefully in our own best interest, is to the American, the U.S. shipper packers that we do use, because the freight across the border for some reason is quite unreasonably high. So we use, I think, three different companies in America that we ship quantities of product to, and they sell our U.S. orders. So what we have done is we have about a 7 or 8 month supply at current sales of products at our U.S. packer shippers. So, and I think that was the right thing to do, because we certainly could have some interruptions or tariffs go on. And, you know, my belief is that in the end, we'll all get this right, and that that if there are tariffs put on, that they'll be either greatly reduced or eliminated. I would just hate to see the fabulous relationship, notwithstanding, you know, Canada's delinquency on maintenance obligations, but I would sure hate to, it'd be like me, getting mad at all my American friends. It just doesn't feel right. And, I'd be very uncomfortable with it. But so that's what we've done to try and mitigate the situation if the tariffs are in fact put on. But I don't know. If it happened and they stuck, we'd have to make some adjustment to our prices. But there's just no way. I would say our company will work without any profit for a period of time before we would do that. I feel too strongly, Jim, about people everywhere being able to afford any of our products that they need. I want everybody to have what I have had, a good return to health and a healthy life. So, I'm personally offended anything that's going to stand in the way. Big Pharma and the bureaucrats and the health department give us enough of a rough ride. Big Pharma seems to get away with saying whatever they like, and the natural health business has trouble just telling the truth. Well, we tell the truth, but have trouble getting away with telling the truth. So, I'm just so strongly passionate about people being able to access our products and help themselves and have the experience that I had. I'm here today because of these products. I'm a lucky man. And so we're just going to do our best. And I will never, you know, it's like saying to me, geez, Wayne, what do you say? You just forget your American friends, your personal friends. Just no, I'm never doing that. They're too good of friends. We're so close. You know, we're very much alike, Jim, the Canadian and American people. And it's interesting, in the U.S., you have different accents depending on where a person's from. But, you know, you're all American people are very patriotic. I love it when I go to an American city and so many houses have an American flag at the front door. I love the Americans' patriotism. And, I want us to stay best friends. I have so many good friends I love in the States and do business with and interact with, like you. And I never want to give that up.
Well, we'll be friends even if Trump does something sillier. All right, Wayne?
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. No, that's for sure.
We have to.
I have my fingers crossed that, because I'll never believe President Trump's a bad man. He's a guy that gets things done, and we just need to, Canada and these other countries need to do what they promised to do. The border problem is serious. You know, this fentanyl, it's killing people. There's 25 people a day, apparently, die of overdoses from fentanyl in Canada. 25 people every day. I mean, it's a crying shame. And so it's very serious. And Trump has talked about even the death penalty for the people that manufacture and peddle this stuff. And I get it. They're killing enough other people. So very serious crime this is. So, you know, he has some good points. He's not a crazy man. He's, he's very much against drugs, and his family doesn't use alcohol or smoke or anything like that. So he's very serious about it. We just shouldn't be losing, especially young people, to this horrible drug that they're peddling. And I guess crossing the borders into the United States with. Not just from Canada. I guess Mexico apparently is the bigger problem and the bigger access way. But these last 4 years, pardon me, there have been a lot of people pour into the United States without permission. And if you remember the Cuban, I remember that in Miami when the Castro emptied his jails and his insane asylums, and of the 250,000 people that landed in South Florida, at the end of the day, it turned out 10% of them were serious criminals or criminally insane. So, I mean, that was an injection of 25,000 people into South Florida and into the United States that you'd rather not have had, you know. So, got to be serious about these things. Immigration's very important. Every country, really.
Wayne, we need to wrap it up. We're out of time. Thank you so much for your time today. Look forward to speaking with you always. And I hope you have a good week. Are you on the road this coming week visiting stores?
Yep, my son and I are in Southern Ontario visiting health stores. It's always a great pleasure, great people in these stores. So we always enjoy this. And we're on the road today again, then we'll be home for the evening. But thanks for your time, Jim. It's always nice being with you. And we'll see you next week.
I will look forward to it, Wayne. Be safe. We are out of time for today, but back tomorrow. You be safe, you great loyal listeners. Have a great day. Bye now.